Do you sometimes get frustrated by your constant inner dialogue or inner chatter that sometimes may seem to be quite negative? Today, we're talking about how you deal with that inner critic, that inner voice that sometimes gets in the way of the things that you want to do. If you want to find out how to improve your relationships, head over to therelationshipmaze.com, where you can also do our free online conflict style quiz and discover your conflict style in relationships. Welcome to today's podcast. And today we're going to be talking about that inner critic, or that inner voice, that, you know, that sort of chit chat that we often have going on in our heads that, you know, sometimes is there when we just want to be relaxing or just want to be enjoying what we're doing. But there's that inner voice that kind of nags us or is saying like, oh, you'll never be able to do that. You're not good enough. Whatever it might do. You know, that sort of thing that I'm talking about.
Yeah, you mean particularly that kind of critical voice, yeah? Because usually it's, well, I mean, some of you might have an inner voice that tells you on a daily basis how absolutely wonderful you are. That's possible as well, yeah?
I mean, particularly the narcissists out there, maybe, you know, how wonderful you are.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, sort of in small doses, that's probably a good thing, right? If you have that voice running in your head, well, I'm great, I can do this, I can do that, I'm doing very well here. Great. But I think a lot of the time, what you're describing, Tom, is the negative voice. Yeah. So this inner critic, as you say, that constantly questions whether you're doing things in the best way possible, whether you could do better, whether you need to check something again, whether it's good enough, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think we do get sometimes that voice, hopefully, for a lot of people where we think, yeah, I can do this. I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think even those internal words where, you know, if we're having to say to ourselves, you know, I'm wonderful, I'm great. I wonder if that actually, in my experience, I don't relate to that actually. Cause it's sort of, I think when you feel good about things, when you feel worthy or when you feel good in yourself, you don't need to say it. If you have to say it in a way, I wonder even if that's because you have to say it because you don't feel kind of good enough.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So what your thoughts are with that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I suppose so. Yeah. I mean, yes and no. I mean, I think there's nothing wrong with kind of reminding yourself, reminding yourself that actually you've done something well. I think a lot of the time we don't we? We don't actually tell ourselves well done. And, you know, there's this old theory, I don't know whether actually it's true, but that we are hardwired for negativity because we're always scanning for danger and safety. We're much more likely to focus the negative things in our life than the positives. So I think that's true to a large extent. So very often we don't really sit there and scan for successes and think about, well, all the things that we've done so well. In a day. We're much more likely to go the other way, right?
Yeah. So what you're talking about, the negativity bias, which, like you said, is for survival. Mm. We notice the things where they may indicate risk or threats more, because basically hundreds of years ago on the wild plains where we had to, you know, hunter-gatherers, you know, it makes more sense to notice risk rather than think things will be safe. Mm. So there is that sort of bias, which in a way is a little bit different. I think it is important, like you said, we need to acknowledge those things we do well. We want to acknowledge the things that have gone well in the day. Mm. You know, some of these exercises, which, again, if you're listening and you haven't tried this, at the end of the day, writing down three things that went well in the day, or three things that somehow seemed good in the day, however you want to phrase it. Mm. You know, some people talk about, you know, gratitude journals. It's talked about in positive psychology, where you write down three things you're grateful for. I find it easier for a lot of people to write down three things that are positive from the day. Mm. Because sometimes as well, you know, when somebody's in a really stuck place, it can be difficult to find things you feel grateful for. Mm. These are useful because it helps us to, yeah, like you said, acknowledge the good things, the positive. And balance that natural tendency. Mm-hmm. But still, in terms of, I think a lot of the time, in my experience, when we're feeling good about ourselves, there's less of an internal chat. I don't know if you experience that, because I think this is really interesting as well, because we don't know what goes on in someone else's head. It's like, you know, we presume that, you know, this sort of chatter that we have in our head, everyone has, but we don't know.
And well, I think, again, I think it's, I think this is not something that kind of developed overnight. It's usually because of earlier templates in life, because there has been messaging earlier on in our life which questioned us or our capabilities, or it questioned the foundations are in our life, so to speak. So we might have had some messaging from our parents, either voluntarily or involuntarily, that, you know, we are not so capable, that we have to think twice about what we're doing and whether we're doing it well. So most of the time when I'm thinking about this kind of inner critic or critical dialogue that that people have, that's something that's been there pretty much most of their life, most of the time. It didn't just come, it didn't just happen yesterday. I mean, it might have developed out of a situation, yeah, because there was a really terrible situation at work with a bullying line manager, for example. Okay, so that can create also, that can set something in motion for someone where they become then more aware or more fearful of their own capabilities. But a lot of the time, this is not new. You know, your inner critic has been there well and alive for quite a few number of years, don't you think?
Yes, and I think that's also important, is that it's been there for most of our life, but not all of it. Because, you know, I don't believe we're born instantly thinking, I can't do maths. I'm never going to be good at this. You know, these are things that we learn, like you said, through early experiences. Maybe the way parents or carers respond to us, maybe experiences at school. Mm. You know, with sort of traumatic experiences, it would have an effect on how we see ourselves, how we kind of talk to ourselves and talk within our own minds. So we learn it. And I think that's really important, is these are learned. These patterns of thinking are learned. They're learned from such an early age and reinforced that they become almost automatic. So we go into a situation and, you know, somebody looks at us in a certain way, and that almost immediate thought is, they don't like me. Something wrong with me. So this becomes automatic, whereas it was learned at some point early on. And the thing is, once we learn that, maybe, you know, say, for example, when you're five and, you know, you're at your primary school and you kind of you do something like you knock a drink over and it kind of messes up the whole like art display that's been going on for your school or something. And like everyone looks at you and laughs at you, or kind of, you know, the teacher says, how could you do that? You're so stupid, or whatever some teachers, you know, may have said by accident because they were in an unresourceful space at that time. And that has such an impact that we start to then, every time someone looks at us in a similar way, we think about that similar response we had then, which is like, oh, I'm clumsy, I'm useless, or whatever it happens to be. And it becomes so ingrained. It's this pattern of thinking. Yeah. So essentially,
it's outside of our awareness a lot of the time. We don't even notice that this is running in the background. Yeah.
And I think that's the first thing, is that, you know, become aware of that inner voice, because some of us are more aware than others. Some people, and I think actually when I was probably 17 or 18, and, you know, I used to think, oh, this inner critic, is this just me? So, you know, I've known people who think that this inner voice is almost, you know, they describe it like it's they're worried that there's a mental health problem, because it's like there's this voice in my head. But we all do have voices in our heads, which is different from, you know, where there could be some sort of a, you know, psychosis or psychotic condition. But we have these voices in our heads. You know, some of these voices may be remembering, like, parents talking to us when we're younger, that we do something, and it could be almost in a voice of our parent or somebody else.
Exactly. We internalize our parents' voices, of course. And we hear our parents' voices, or the voices of other people in authority when we're growing up. And it's interesting. It's very often then, because we're so used to it, it becomes part of the identity for loads of people. So it's this sense of, this is me. I am someone who's often anxious about doing things. I am someone who worries about going out and talking to people I don't know in social situations. I'm a person who's awkward, etc., etc. These are the kind of messages that then become, which sort of form part of the overall identity of someone. It's quite hard to, at times, disentangle these critical voices from the sense of self that somebody might have.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and that's important, is that those voices, that internal chatter, is part of our experience. These are learned things that we've learned through our life, but our self is very different. That mm-hmm. that internal dialogue is part of our experience, but it's not us as such.
Yeah,
and our minds, you know, our minds is, because as humans we have language, and language is part of the challenge as well. Your language can be great because it's allowed us to create poetry, it allows us to create great books, and it allows us to come up with amazing thoughts and ideas and essentially solve problems, because we're able to symbolize things around us by using words. So language is a phenomenal thing, but it also causes us to have more challenges than the rest of the animal kingdom, because we have this way of problem solving through symbols of words.
So well, what we manifest realities through language,
We
manifest realities through language.
So we create what we say is reality through language. And essentially, so what we do in every situation is our minds, basically they describe, then they evaluate, and then they problem solve. So, you know, for example, we go into a shop and someone looks at us in a certain way, and we think, they look at me with their eyes slightly closed. We describe it, and instantly, based on our past experience, we evaluate it. So they don't like me. There's something, there's something about me they don't like. There's something not good enough. And then we problem solve. So the problem solving might be then, okay, because based on that reaction, we then, you know, maybe leave that shop or never go there again, or we get angry with them. So we go through this series of different stages that minds do. And it's remembering that this reaction that we have, these initial responses, this internal critic is learned. But that's not you. It's what's being conditioned. It's basically, it's maybe, you know, these things that, like I said, that experience at primary school where we did something and felt humiliated and teacher said something that, that really stuck. What they said is not you, even though we may repeat it to ourselves. That was something that essentially our mind took on board, then uses as an evaluation, like, well, you know, of course I can't get that job because I'm not, because basically I'm not good enough.
We hold on. No, I just thought it might be quite helpful, you know, this to step back and just for now, just to pause and think about a recent situation where you felt that you didn't do well enough, maybe a project at work or an interaction with someone else where you felt like I could have handled that better, and kind of see what are the messages that you are telling yourself? What are you telling yourself about this situation, and what are you telling yourself about yourself in that situation? It might be quite interesting to just write that down and think about it in terms of the I always or I never, these sort of absolute statements that you might tell yourself in these scenarios.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, think about some of that chatter that you have in your head when, you know, you start to feel negative, or what you might define as negative, or what you might experience as that. Or in a way that you don't want to feel, or the way you don't want to think. And sometimes it's useful to think, okay, so this is what my mind is telling me. This is this dialogue in my head. And I think it's useful to think of it as sometimes like background music that's playing in a shop. And, you know, it's like you go into a shop and this music's playing, and some music you like, some music you don't. Sometimes you go into that shop and you think, oh no, they're playing that again. and you just let it play and you get on doing what you're doing. It might annoy you a little bit. It might kind of be there, but you can, you know that it's just there. It's being played.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the same with some of this chatter, is noticing, like, this is this chatter that's going in my mind. These are things that I've learned from the past. And just like that piece of music, just noticing, okay, this is what my mind's playing. This is this automatic response that I've learned at some point in the past, and it becomes like spam. Mm.
You know, like that, spam, or email. Yeah. Or the other image that I always find quite helpful is this idea that, you know, you listen to a piece of music and you automatically start tapping your feet, yeah, along to the rhythm of the piece, or etc. So, and that's automatic. You don't think about it. It's the same thing. So your automatic thoughts are exactly the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's the key, is first of all, recognizing that they're thoughts.
Mm.
Because sometimes we get so hooked into them,
mm.
we feel that they're the reality, that that's us, that mm. that voice saying, I can never do this,
mm.
is us, rather than mm. that internal voice saying, I could never do that. But it's not reality, it's that learned response. Mm. And this is something that's in acceptance and commitment therapy with ACT, is called diffusion.
Mm-hmm.
Because we tend to get fused with these thoughts where we, that they're like filters that we see the world through, like, I'm not good enough, or mm-hmm. people won't like me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's what we're looking through the lens of this thought, and not realizing it's a thought. It's just like, this is how we see the world.
Mm-hmm.
When we step back and realize, okay, this is this thought. At some point in your life when you were younger, there was some sets of situation where you started to internalize these voices, these kind of thoughts.
Mm.
But yeah. that's not you. That was learned at some point. And it's remembering, this is the thought. It's not reality. This is what your mind is presenting with you as this automatic response. Just like you said, like the music comes on, you tap your feet.
Mm.
Just like that.
Yeah. So one of the exercises in ACT that I quite like in regard to the idea of diffusion is this idea that you stand up and you walk around the room, and as you're walking around the room, you say out loud, I can't walk along the room. I can't walk in this room. And you notice that as you're saying that, you're still walking around in the room. So there is this mismatch between what you're actually doing, the reality of the situation, and what you're telling yourself. That's the purpose of this particular exercise.
Yeah, so essentially what you're saying with that is that, you know, do you have to always do what your mind tells you?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like when our mind says, I can't do that, you go, okay, well, I'm not going to do that because my mind's telling me I can't do that. It's like you're saying, you know, if you're walking around the room and saying, I can't walk around the room, you're doing that, even though your mind is saying this. And I think that's the thing, is that in order to grow and develop, in order to move in a direction in our lives where we find, whether it's fulfillment or living a life of value, it's knowing that even though our minds may be saying things or we have certain feelings, we can still move towards those things that we want in life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's having that committed course of action, despite what our minds are saying or the feelings that we're experiencing. And this can be very challenging to do, obviously.
Mm.
And another nice little exercise as well is sometimes when you're aware of that internal dialogue, you know, whether it's, I can't do this, I'm never going to be able to do that, or whatever, or I'm not good enough. It's just notice that thought. Notice almost the way that you're saying it to yourself.
Mm.
And starting to hear the words and change the way that it sounds. So, for example, you could slow it down. So we could go, I can't do that. Or speed it up. Make it really, really fast, like a cartoon character. You know, I sometimes get people to imagine a cartoon character. Somebody once imagined like Bart Simpson saying, I can't do that. I can't do Bart Simpson. But it's, it's hearing it like Bart Simpson saying it. And suddenly when you say it, it takes away that thought used to feel, that thought might used to have made you feel powerless, or you might have, as a result, felt a sense of feeling powerless. But suddenly when it's like Bart Simpson, it's like you just laugh a bit.
It distorts it, doesn't it? It takes the sting out of it. Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's realizing those thoughts, essentially, they're just words.
Exactly.
They have a feeling connected often. But those words can be said in different ways. Those words had power, but they had power that we almost gave them by that repeated way that we tended to say them. And when we start to kind of hear them as words and give them that different tonality, different expression, it's like they form a different meaning.
Well, they ridicule the message sometimes as well, don't they?
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time the message is just so unnecessary, really.
Exactly. It's like, you know, when you meet somebody, you can use the same words, but they can have such different meaning. Like I could say, hi, it's great to meet you. Or I could say, hi, it's great to meet you. And it kind of just, you know, it means it just has a completely different meaning, but they're the same words. Again, it's knowing that, you know, often these learned phrases that we have going on in our heads, they automatically, just like you said, with a piece of music, your foot starts tapping. These words may trigger off us to feel in a certain way where essentially in the past it may have been blocking. So changing the way that they sound can, you know, really have a huge impact.
They can, absolutely. And I think another way I find some clients might find helpful is to associate a character with these particular messages. So if they're very harsh voices in particular, if they're very critical voices, it might be quite helpful to think of a particular character from a book or from a film who would say these things. So one of my clients, for example, she associated her negative voice with Aunt Lydia from The Handmaid's Tale, which I thought was a wonderful analogy, and it really helped her. So every time these ideas popped into her head, oh, I can't do this, etc., she imagined Aunt Lydia saying that, and that enabled her to step away from them, to look at them a little bit more critically.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's finding the right voice.
Yes, absolutely. One that fits, yeah.
Some voices could make it feel worse for some people, I suppose, yeah, as well. Sure. So it's sort of, you know, So it's finding that right voice and doing something with that. Another thing people can do is sing that internal dialogue so out loud, just to any song. It's like, you know, it could be a silly song. Or it could be just,
funny accent. Yeah,
like sometimes in acts, there's suggested even just sing it to happy birthday. So, but just singing that internal voice out, it starts to lose some of the power that it seemed to have over you.
Yeah, so this is just to be clear. I mean, these ideas are, you know, they might not do it entirely for you. It might not change overnight because, particularly if you've grown so accustomed and used to these internal voices, it takes some time to kind of shake them off. But they help. There's some way of helping, absolutely, because they help you to differentiate between, you know, what is it that I have internalized here? What is it? If I have internalized it, I can also expel it. I can exercise it, so to speak, and get rid of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And just like you said, these things on their own may not be enough. That's why we go to therapy. You might explore where things come from and what sort of internal beliefs that underlie this we might need to work on. So there's a lot more work that may need doing. But some of these things can really help. And I think just for me to end on a note where, you know, what's also important is that just because you have certain thoughts, it doesn't make you those thoughts. So I can think, I'm a bad person. It doesn't mean you are a bad person. You may have thoughts like, you know, out in a shop and somebody's taking ages at the checkout and you're thinking, oh, I wish I could just shove them out the way. Remember, that's just a thought. Everyone has thoughts that, you know, you could then think, I must be a bad person to have a thought like this. But there's a difference between what you do and what you think. having these thoughts doesn't make you a bad person. They're just thoughts which become automatic. We've learned at some point. Remember, this is just a thought.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very good point to end on.
Great. So thanks for listening today. Please tune into the episode next week. And we look forward to speaking with you next week.
Take good care until then.
Bye.
Bye.